Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
This is supposed to be a celebration, Rico Bronya. We have somehow reached 500 episodes of Rico Bronya. Congratulations to everybody who has ever listened, downloaded. Now that we got all the niceties out of the way, we are facing a late June crisis. The New York Mets have lost 6 in a row. They got swept by the Atlanta Braves. I guess when you think about it, it only makes sense to have the 500th edition of Rico Bronya be in the middle of Panic City. Like, what would be perfect for a 500th episode other than talking about getting our asses kicked in Atlanta, questioning everything we ever thought about this team, and panicking in the middle of June? Like, that is the perfect 500th episode of Rico Bronya. Let me start off by saying something positive. I do. I want to start off with a positive note. And that positive note isn't going to be as simple as, hey, we're still in first place for now, tied with the Philadelphia Phillies. The positive note I want to give you is I want to take you all the way back to 2015. 2015 is one of those years. It's recent. It's not that long ago. Just about every listener to the Rico Bronya remembers 2015, unless you're 15 years or younger, which is certainly possible. We thank the youngins for downloading and subscribing to the Rico Bronya. But 2015 was a cool year. It was a special year. The Mets got all the way to the World Series. And what have I told you? That in the middle of the 2015 season, in the month of June, right around this time of year, the New York Mets also faced a crisis. In fact, they lost 7 consecutive games that actually dropped them below 500. They went into that losing streak with a record of 36-30, and they were a game and a half up in the National League East. They proceeded to lose 7 in a row, which included being swept in Atlanta against the Braves. Not a good Braves team, by the way. And yet, the New York Mets won the pennant that year. That's my positive. That's my positive. My positive is also that's baseball. Baseball is a confounding game. Last year, we sat here in April and in May and talked about, hey, maybe you never know. Maybe out of nowhere, the Mets are going to turn their season around. They did, and 2024 turned out to be a very memorable season. Now, I'm hoping it's not going to be the opposite, where the Mets dance out to the best record in the National League and then out of absolute nowhere, completely fall apart. But there's no sugarcoat in the last week. The week has sucked. And I want to start with something Carlos Mendoza said after the Mets lost to the Atlanta Braves 7-1, getting swept of this three-game series. He was simply asked, hey, you guys aren't playing well over these six games. What's the biggest problem? And Mendoza, without hesitating, said, it's the starting pitching. And I completely understand why that would be something Carlos would say, or maybe a lot of people in the audience would nod their head and say, that is their biggest problem. Look at their last five starts. Because really, this losing streak began with a good performance by Clay Holmes, but he was taken out early because they were being extra cautious after Colorado. 3 2/3 innings, six runs. 4 1/3 innings, six runs. A real good performance by David Peterson, 7 innings, three runs. 3 2/3, four runs. And in the finale of this series, 4 2/3, three runs. That's garbage. And absolutely do I agree that the starting pitching has not been good enough. But I got to tell you, I don't think that's their biggest problem right now. Their biggest problem is that over the last 2 days in Atlanta, they scored one run. One run. And trust me, Chris Sale is good. We all know that. So you want to tip your hat in game two of this series to Chris Sale? Fine. But they had Spencer Strider early. They had opportunities against Spencer Strider early. They hit the ball hard off Spencer Strider early. And then they got dominated. And even over the last three innings of this game, the finale of this series, granted the Braves had broken the game open, they couldn't do a damn thing against the underbelly of Atlanta's bullpen. And when you look at this six-game losing streak, there's a lot of offensive crap mixed in there. They got shut out by the Tampa Bay Rays in the finale of the three-game series. Yeah, they scored four runs against Atlanta in the opener, but basically all those runs were early. What'd they do in the last six innings of the game? They did nothing. They get shut out by Chris Sale, essentially, 8 2/3 worth, and then Raisel Iglesias got the last out. And then in this game against Spencer Strider, they scored one run. So I guess when you suck the way the Mets suck right now, and they're bad at everything, their defense is bad, their base running is bad, their starting pitching is bad, their bullpen is bad, their offense is bad. I mean, there's no redeeming quality over this losing streak, which happens. It's baseball. I guess we could argue, well, this is worse than that, which is worse than this. But I bring it back to the offense because tag, you're it. The starting pitching pitched well above their skis for months. For months. They were outstanding. And we all knew, not that they were going to implode, which, yes, the last week's been pretty much an implosion. Not that we waited for an implosion, but we waited for them to come back to the norm. I look at these games over the last 5 days, and I say, if this offense is clicking, if this offense is hitting, if this offense is performing to the expectations that I have for them, and I think a lot of people have for them, you win some of these games. You do. You could win the game on Wednesday against Atlanta. You gave up five runs. You can't score six. I mean, you look at the opener of this series. They couldn't have tacked on a few more runs. This offense needs to wake up. And I know it's frustrating when you're facing really good starting pitchers. Chris Sale is a damn good starting pitcher. He was unhittable. Spencer Strider eventually settled down, but let's face it about Spencer Strider. The guy's had one really good start since coming off the IL and coming off Tommy John surgery, and I've been told games against the Rockies don't count the same. So I expected more from this offense. We all have. And if they are going to turn this thing around, it's got to start soon because their offense has done nothing. Now, right now, and I guess this is the other thing I would say to try to calm everybody down, maybe try to calm myself down, because the Rico Bronya is a therapy session, not just for you, but for myself, is that you're never this bad when you're losing. I think my dad taught me that early on as a Met fan, except the problem was he taught me that in 1992, the worst team money could buy, and the truth was they were that bad. So as he was telling me, oh, you're never that bad when you're struggling, just like you're never as good as you are when you're hot, it was probably the wrong example because in 1992, they truly were atrocious. Right now, when you look at this team over this six-game run against Tampa and Atlanta, we know they're not this bad. Are there warts and warning signs that are concerning moving forward? Absolutely. but they're not this bad. They're not this bad a defensive team. They're not this bad a base running team. They're not this bad an offensive team. They've scored one run in the last two games. If you want to go back to the last few innings, let me see. When did they score their last run in game one? The fifth inning. So they went the last five innings of game one not scoring a run. So in the last 23 innings in Atlanta, they've scored one run. Let that sink in. So when Mendy says it starts with the starting pitching, I mean, it's tough to argue and defend that the starting pitching has been nothing short of garbage. I agree with you. But on what world, on what planet is one run in 23 innings acceptable from this offense? From an offense that features soon-to-be all-star Francisco Lindor, soon-to-be all-star Pete Alonso, the great Juan Soto. Atrocious. The hitting with runners in scoring position, atrocious. 2-for-15 in this series. So it's all bad right now. It's just all bad. Let me go back, though, to the Chris Sale game. So I was actually asked by Sean Morash, who mostly likes to troll me, but I thought it was an innocent question. He asked me, how pissed off were you watching the Chris Sale game? And I said to him, I wasn't pissed off. I was comatose. Because the game two of this series, the Wednesday night middle game of this series, was a game, and there are very few games that really feel this way. The game was over one inning in. Like, honestly, when you face a top-notch pitcher like Chris Sale, and major credit to the Atlanta Braves for acquiring Chris Sale and really resurrecting his career. I think back to that offseason a year and a half ago when Sale was available and basically the Red Sox were saying, we'll pay part of the salary. We just want to get rid of him. And we briefly talked about him on the Rico. And I think our hesitation towards Chris Sale was, well, it didn't work with Verlander. It didn't work with Scherzer. These are older pitchers. Is it really going to work with Chris Sale? And is Chris Sale a New York kind of guy? I don't know if Chris Sale would have been a New York kind of guy, but man, does he have something left in his career. But early in this game, after Starling Marte got that infield hit, this is the second batter of the game, I remember thinking what I normally think when you face a top line starting pitcher and Chris Sale is still that. You better get to him early. They're usually going to give you a chance early in a game, and you got to seal the deal. And believe it or not, Chris Sale gave them three base runners in the first three innings, and the Mets did nothing with those opportunities. But in the bottom of the first inning, the game was over. When Paul Blackburn throws a first-pitch fastball right down the middle to Ronald Acuna Jr., thinking what? That Acuna, who swings first pitch like 90% of the time, you're going to sneak one past him? A guy who came into the game hitting 392, I sneak one past him. And Acuna Jr. made him pay and hits a leadoff home run. And we all thought the same thing. They're not even going to score a run. Great, that's the game. Now, little did we know, even though we thought it, yeah, we were right. He wouldn't score a run. That'd be enough. And then you see Paul Blackburn give up a base hit to the crappy Alex Verdugo, walk Austin Riley, get a great defensive play by Pete Alonso. And then it feels like, all right, maybe Paul Blackburn can limit the damage, even though one run is probably going to be enough. And Luis Torrens, who we have thrown so many bouquets at, I said the other day on the Rico, I've said it on the Fan as well, he's earned playing time. He has earned either starting over Francisco Alvarez, especially after what happened to Alvi in game one of this series, and really just the bad season Alvarez has had. Torrens has earned it. He's been a great clutch hitter. He hits lefties. His defense has been spot on. Torrens should play most of the time. And Luis Torrens, and this is just a sign of where this team is right now and how much they suck at everything. We have to watch Luis Torrens use his helmet to scoop up a baseball, which is against the rules, which is a catcher's balk, which literally led to freaking two runs. Now, technically, it led to one unearned run, but who the hell knows what happens with Marcell Ozuna if Torrens isn't scooping up the baseball with his helmet. But either way, when you're facing Chris Sale, when you're facing this team, when your offense is doing nothing, you can't give runs away. And I'll tell you this right now, because when we did our Rico after game one, and if you missed that, I don't know why you'd want to go back and listen to it, but you can. It's episode 499. We did an instant reaction to game one. Francisco Alvarez took a beating, and rightfully so. He took a beating for trying to block a ball in the dirt with a backhand. He took a beating for the throw to second base, which allowed the runner to go to third, which basically set up the game-winning sac fly by Austin Riley. And Alvarez deserved all the criticism. But I will tell you this right now. Luis Torrent scooping up the goddamn baseball with his helmet, which added a run, which moved the runner up a base, which is just mental mistake. That's worse. That's worse than what Alvarez did in the opener of this series. It is. One is in the first inning. Okay. The other one's in the 10th inning. Cost them the game. Okay. I get it from a situational standpoint. But in terms of which mistake is dumber, which mistake you can't even rationalize, that's the one. And that's really disappointing from a guy who's played such smart defense all season long. And that was really the beginning of what was a horrible night for Luis Torrens. He couldn't block balls in the dirt. He got lucky, I think it was in the second inning, when a ball got past him and the runner, Ozzy Albies, who was standing there on third base, ended up getting stranded on third base too, decides not to run. And even the wild pitch, which scored Albies two innings later, this was a different at-bat for, or different situation, which Albies was on base. They called it a wild pitch. Bull bleep. That was a pass ball. So I love Luis Torrens. He's had a wonderful season. But Wednesday night in game two of this series, after all of us was dumping on Alvarez, he can't play anymore. Some are saying send him down. Here's Luis Torrens basically saying, I'm going to make Francisco look good. I got you. I'm not going to be able to block a ball in the dirt. I'm going to commit pass balls that are called wild pitches. And oh, yeah, I'm going to hand the runaway by trying to scoop a baseball up with my damn helmet. And that moment, that error, because it technically goes down as an error on Torrens, isn't that everything you need to know about the way this team is playing? And on the other end, and I know the Braves have a lot of work to do to get back to 500, they made every play. Nick Allen, the light-hitting shortstop, what a pain in the ass he was in this series. Not only is he making every play, his walk, and that was a good at-bat by Nick. He got ahead of the count 2-0. Peterson worked it even 2-2, and then he drew a walk. That walk in the eighth inning of game one of this series, changed the entire game. So not only do you have him playing great defense, he works out the walk that really changed everything. He drew two more walks in game two of this series and had two more hits in game three of this series. If we're going to create a new award called Pain in the Ass Award, in which we're honoring somebody on the other team, Nick Allen would be your inaugural winner. What a pain he was. But that's everything you need to know about the way things are going right now. You let a 225 ninth place hitter really become a star of this series. But the Braves made every play defensively, and the Mets didn't. That was part of the problem. Now, Paul Blackburn gives up those three runs early. He's not helped out by the Luis Torrens mistake. And I thought after that, Blackburn was at least halfway decent. He got through a leadoff triple in the second inning, got a huge out against Alex Verdugo. He gave you a very quick 1-2-3 third inning. Got into trouble in the fourth inning, but was able to get two more outs. I think the pitch count kind of did him in.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Wherever summer takes you, save on your journey with True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull. Enjoy the new Red Bull Summer Edition, White Peach, a perfect balance of bold, sweet, and refreshing. Right now, grab any 3 8-ounce Red Bull for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon, just in time for your next road trip. Save big all summer long with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
In the first inning, he sort of settled in. The problem was he's out of the game in the fourth inning. And so now you're asking Jose Buteau, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it does feel like Jose Buteau's 3.00 ERA is very misleading, because it feels like he gives up a ton of inherited runners, which is exactly what he did in that fourth inning. It was really an inherited runner given up by Luis Torrens, because that pass ball led to the fourth Atlanta run. But it was too many runs. You know, even though Buteau ended up doing a decent job and Jose Castillo did a decent job, they're down 4 runs to Chris Sale, and it's like they didn't have a chance. A lot of times where the Mets don't score runs, they have a lot of opportunities and they don't cash them in. They had one at-bat, the entire game with runner in scoring position, and it was in the first inning against Chris Sale. And like I said at the top, when you're facing a guy like Chris Sale, you're going to get your opportunities early, if you get any opportunities, and you have to take advantage of it. And they did not do it. They did not do it. And again, the Braves are making all the plays. Alex Verdugo makes a great sliding catch against Tyrone Taylor. Meanwhile, the Mets aren't making the plays, and they're making dumb mistakes like Luis Torrens trying to scoop a ball out with his helmet. They couldn't touch Chris Sale. You saw Brian Snitker, and I thought it was evident all week long. Brian Snitker was managing this thing very aggressively. He knew the importance. Like, Chris Sale's at 102 pitches after 8 innings, and he let him start the ninth inning. This is a guy who's had injury history. He's in his late 30s. And I honestly think what Brian Snitker was saying to himself is, I'm up 5-0, and I'm not effing around. I need this game. And so he lets Chris Sale start the eighth inning. I thought he did a similar thing with Spencer Strider. Here's a guy coming off Tommy John surgery. He's made how many starts off of Tommy John surgery? 6? And he actually let him start the sixth inning with a pitch count of 86. I think the reason he was aggressive is because Brian Snitker knew they needed to win this series. They needed this series. And they played like a team that needed it a hell of a lot more. The game, the finale of this series, the most stunning thing about game 3 of this series is the Mets have scored 1 run, like I said, in the last 23 innings, which is beyond pathetic. And if I gave everybody before it happened, obviously, like 10 guesses on how they get the 1 run, do you think anybody in their right mind would have predicted Ronnie Mauricio is going to come up with a clutch RBI single? That was the most stunning part. Ronnie Mauricio comes up after Francisco Alvarez gets sort of robbed by a great play by Nick Allen. We talked about Nick Allen being a pain in the ass. Makes a really smooth defensive play on a hard hit ground ball off the bat of Francisco Alvarez. There's two outs. There's a runner in scoring position. No one in their right mind thinks Ronnie Mauricio is coming through. I don't. He's looked overmatched at times. He's hit a couple of home runs, but for the most part, he hasn't looked like a major leaguer. And to his credit, he got a 2-1 fastball from Spencer Strider. He hit the crap out of it, and he came through with an RBI hit. The Mets had a 1-0 lead. I wasn't confident, but I'm like, all right. All right. Maybe Clay Holmes is going to deliver. Maybe he can go 6 or 7. Maybe they could hand the baseball right to Reed Garrett and Edwin Diaz in a clean situation, and the Mets can win. I knew they weren't getting any more runs. Because, not because there was any sign of it, they actually had great contact against Spencer Strider. That was my own negativity telling me they weren't going to score any runs. What I've watched over the last week told me they weren't going to score any runs. And guess what? They didn't score another run. And not only did they not score another run, they went down so freaking meekly. And that was after getting a lot of good contact against Strider in this game. But it worked out the way I described it with Chris Sale. You have opportunities early. You have to take advantage of it. Two on, two out, first inning. Starling Marte flails at two sliders in the dirt, works behind 0-2, grounds out to third base. There goes opportunity number one. After Mauricio comes through with the RBI single, here's Francisco Lindor, who made great contact against Strider in the first inning. Makes great contact again. Problem is, it's right at Michael Harris. Boom, we're done. But the real blown opportunity, the one that will stick with me when I think about their rare scoring chances against Spencer Strider, is when Brandon Nimmo, behind the count 0-2, credit to him, hit that double down the left field line to start the third inning. You are set up with a runner on second and nobody out, and you've got Soto, and you've got Alonso, and you've got Marte. This game needs to be 2-0. Needs to be. There is no excuse for not getting that run in. And what happens? Juan Soto hits a medium fly ball to right field. Pete Alonso looks like he's never seen Spencer Strider before and strikes out. And now it's set up for Starling Marte to just ground out. And by the way, what made it worse is in the middle of the Alonso at-bat, Nimmo steals third. So Pete didn't even have to do anything magical to get that second run home. Do what Soto did. Hit the ball to the outfield, and it's 2-0 Mets. And instead, he strikes out, Marte grounds out, and you could have at that point, even though at that point the Mets are actually winning the game 1-0, but you could have shut the TV off because the limp dick offense was at its best. From that moment on, the Brandon Nimmo double, the New York Mets would get one more hit. It would happen with one out in the 9th inning when they were already down 7-1. They would get one more base runner, a one-out walk to Francisco Lindor in the 5th inning. Spencer Strider at one point struck out 4 in a row. He struck out 6 out of 8 guys at one point. They had no shot. No shot. And they had their chances early. They were 1-for-6 with runners in scoring position after the first 3 innings of this game. And to expect that Holmes and the Met bullpen is going to make that one run stand up, not going to happen. Ozzie Albies hits a ball up the middle for a base hit. I was very surprised they sent Matt Olson home on this. I thought they were going to hold him, and it was going to set up bases loaded, one out for Michael Harris. But again, this is a brave team in this series. We haven't watched them all year, and they haven't been good all year, but in this series, they played like a team that was just more aggressive. They were smarter. They wanted it more. And that's usually a cliche you hear in the NBA, but they played as if they wanted it more. And Matt Olson gets sent. Tyrone Taylor, who's usually so good defensively, doesn't make a good throw. It's a tie ball game. And you could feel Clay Holmes dancing with trouble really from the 3rd inning on. He pitches a 1-2-3 first inning. He issues a 2-out walk in the 2nd inning, gets through it, strikes out Ozzie Albies. A really clean first 2 innings from Clay Holmes. But he gave up a 1-out double to that pain in the ass Nick Allen. ended up walking Verdugo, put himself in a tough spot, two on, two out against Austin Riley, and he struck him out, got him to flail at a, I think it was a sweeper off the plate. Great job by Clay, but he had to battle. He had to work. He danced with trouble. Fourth inning was the same thing. He issues a leadoff walk to Matt Olson, which can't happen, gives up a base hit to Marcell Ozuna. There's two on, there's nobody out. He gives up that RBI single to Albies and had to work really, really hard to finally strike out Nick Allen on a borderline strike three, a fastball at the top of the zone. And so he gets through four innings. It's 1-1. But the last two innings he threw, the third inning and the fourth inning, he was exerting a lot of energy. He was having to make a lot of high leverage pitches. His pitch count was exploding, and you just knew the Mets need to hit. How'd they respond, by the way, to Clay Holmes giving up the lead in the fourth inning? They responded by doing nothing. Brandon Nimmo came up with a runner on first and one out, and he struck out. The great Juan Soto came up with a runner on first and two out. What'd he do? He did a Soto. He grounded out weakly to the right side. And the fifth inning was your final tease. Another leadoff walk. How many goddamn leadoff walks do we have to watch? He gives up a base hit to Austin Riley. He walks Matt Olson. It's all set up for Marcell Ozuna, who's a creep, to stick it to the Mets again with bases loaded, one out. And he strikes him out looking on what was strike three, as much as Marcell Ozuna tried to look at it like, bleh. And so here's Clay Holmes, one out away with a very high pitch count. All he's got to do is get out Blake Baldwin, who's had a great year, Drake Baldwin, whatever the hell his name is. He gets him out, five innings, one run. And different than his last five innings, one run, this time he would have been done after five innings because he threw a million pitches. And Baldwin has a battle of an at-bat, and Clay loses him and walks him. What a sucky way to give up the lead officially, walking Baldwin with the bases loaded and two out. Clearly, he had to come out. Mendy was right to get him. He goes to Waskar Brazoban, and we have to have a conversation about Waskar. The bloom is coming off the rose. He had a wonderful May. Wonderful May. Had some magician-like appearances. He's given up runs. He's walking guys. Basically, four out of his last five Brazoban appearances have been lousy. And he comes in here, and he not only issues a bases loaded walk to make it 3-1, he's not even close to Ozzie Albies. He walks him on four pitches. And 3-1 feels like 18-1 with this offense. And what does he do in the sixth inning? 3-1 game. Hey, keep it close. You never know. Maybe the Mets will get to the Brave bullpen. What does he do? He can't field the Nick Allen comebacker. He walks Ronald Acuna. He walks Austin Riley on four pitches. The Braves are set up. Bases loaded, one out. A chance to break the game open. And Matt Olson breaks the game open. So of all the issues the Mets have, and they have a lot of issues right now, there's a lot of things to be worried about. One of the things we got to add to this is Waskar Brazoban and where he stands in the circle of trust. And you look at this series against Atlanta, two of the guys very important in this circle of getting the baseball to Edwin Diaz, they had bad moments. Reed Garrett, Waskar Brazoban in game one as well, and certainly in this game, letting the game slip away. Garrett and Brazoban have struggled. In fact, let me go back to the Dodger game they lost in 13 innings. Since that game, he had a 0.90 ERA coming in. That game, one inning, three hits, two runs, one earned. He had a good performance against the White Sox, gave up a run against Colorado, had a scoreless inning but walked two guys against the Dodgers, had an inning where he gave up a run against the Dodgers, had an inning against the Rockies where he gave up a run, blew a save, had an inning and two-thirds scoreless against the Nats, had the loss to Atlanta on game one, and then this. I mean, this has been a lousy stretch for Waskar Brazoban. Basically, since his seven-out masterpiece against the Red Sox, when the Mets salvaged that series, so that goes back to May 21st, he's not been great. And that was evident in this game. And it forces Carlos Mendoza to go to Justin Hagenman, who was called up today. The Mets made two roster moves today. Max Kranick went on the IL. Maybe that's his excuse for being terrible recently. Kranick goes on the IL. Adcock gets sent down. They bring up Hagenman. They bring back Dednell Nunez. And I thought, and I'm sure the Mets thought this too, Hagenman could have been the bulk guy for Friday's game against Philadelphia. Well, that's out the window. He's not going to be the bulk guy. And now the Mets are considering, what do we do? Who starts this game against Zach Wheeler and the Phillies for first place, trying to avoid a seven-game losing streak? What a great spot to be in. I mean, you can't find an absolute worse spot to try to find a spot starter in Philly against a red-hot Philly team against Zach Wheeler, tied for first place. And oh, by the way, the team's lost six in a row.
All right, so I actually have an update on this per Tecomo. Before I give it to you, is there someone that you'd like to see?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because I don't know what the Mets have decided. I was looking down at the minor leagues, and I wanted to see, all right, who's due, who would possibly be available. And there are two young guys who are candidates based on days, based on when they've pitched. One is Blade Tidwell. The other is Nolan McClain. Blade Tidwell just doesn't deserve to make the start. He did not pitch well when he was given a spot start in his major league debut. But more than that, he hasn't pitched well in the minor leagues. Nolan McClain, and I guess this is the issue the Mets are going to have. Let me just say it. I'd give it to Nolan McClain. He's a top prospect. He got moved to AAA in early May. And you know what he's done at AAA? He's pitched well. His last performance was a six-inning, two-run performance. His performance before that was 5 1/3 innings, one run. Like, he's mostly been good at AAA. So looking at the days coming into this, I thought Nolan McClain and Blade Tidwell are possibilities, and I would absolutely endorse giving this kid a chance because the attitude I'd have is, you know what, I know it's a tough spot. I know it's the Phillies, six-game losing streak, but don't worry. This is just a little taste for you. You're going to go back to the minor leagues, but what a great learning experience to take back to AAA. So even if it's a disaster, don't worry about it. So before you give me the answer, I would like to see Nolan McClain make the start. I don't think it will be Nolan McClain. I guess they would just say, Blade Tidwell, you know what? Screw it. Let's go with him. So that's my opinion. What's the answer?
Well, you got it right. Blade Tidwell starting on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, it just, look, here's what Blade Tidwell has done. Since he got that one opportunity in St. Louis against the Cardinals where he gave up six runs in 3 2/3 innings. His last start was on June 15th, so it is perfect, is his day. That was against Scranton. He pitched 3 2/3 innings, allowed seven hits, and six runs. It was not good. His start before that was 5 innings, 3 runs. Okay, a little bit better. His start before that was 6 innings, 3 runs. His start before that was 5 innings, no hits, 2 runs, and 4 walks. So he ended up giving up a couple of runs. He's had some decent starts down there. To be fair, it's his last start that was bad. But those other starts are not the worst. So, look, is it better than a bullpen game? Sure, especially now with Brazoban having pitched, with Hagenman going back down. But I would have liked to have seen Nolan McClain, mainly because he's a top prospect who's pitched really well. It would have been cool to see, but what can we really expect from Blade Tidwell? I mean, I don't expect much, and that's putting the pressure on the offense. The problem is the offense has to do it against Zach Wheeler, who's probably going to shut him down. It's not good.
What do you think that they're looking at right now and saying, hey, put Blade Tidwell back into the majors, give him another opportunity because the first start was so rough. Who knows, maybe lightning in a bottle would be nice, or you go Nolan McClain, like you said, and all of a sudden he has a rough outing and he kind of like, it kind of hits him wrong and it's a sour taste.
Yeah, I think that they probably just don't want to rush Nolan McClain. They don't think he's ready. This is not an ideal spot to be in because, you know, we're sitting here a week and a half ago and we are talking about the treasures of the Mets rotation. And how are they going to figure out what to do with Montas coming back and with Manaea coming back? And it's amazing what's happened in this last week and a half. Senga gets hurt. McGill gets hurt. Montas just doesn't get guys out at AAA. Now, I agree with Mendy's decision and David Stern's decision. I would insert him in the rotation. I would. Now, would I have the longest leash for him? Not necessarily, but I would have the attitude that Carlos Mendoza has, which is this was his spring training. Was Frankie Montas ever losing a rotation spot with a bad spring training? The answer is no, he wasn't. A lot of guys aren't losing rotation spots because of a bad spring training. So the lights are now on. He likely starts a game against Atlanta next week at Citi Field. It's the middle of a pennant race. And the hope is not that he's going to pitch six scoreless, as great as that would be, but that he keeps him in the game. And at this point, they need him. And I hate to say it, but yeah, I'd rather roll the dice with a Frankie Montas coming off the injured list than calling up kids that aren't ready. That's the truth. So I agree that Montas should be in the rotation. If his first start is terrible, am I going to have a very different opinion? Possibly. I may not have the biggest amount of patience for him, but right now they're not in an ideal spot with where this rotation is. Hopefully Sean Manaea comes back soon and only needs another rehab start or two. But this is not ideal.
So here's the biggest thing about this Mets squad right now, right? To me, the offense isn't clicking, obviously, and that's frustrating because we know they could do better. The pitching staff was something that everyone always sits there and goes, how good is this pitching staff really going to be? They got to really it's going to be impossible for them to be good. They're not going to be that good. And then we got surprised. We got the luxury of, oh, my God, they're pitching. Everyone's under a 3-year ERA. But we knew that eventually the bottom was going to drop, and this was the reality. And the problem is besides Manaea and Peterson and Senga, who two of those still are on the IL, we all thought that this rotation was going to be below average. And that's where we're at right now. So I got to be honest, they need to do more. They need to be proactive, make a trade, bring somebody else in here who's actually going to be able to help strengthen this starting pitching.
So we went from they got too many arms to they got to make a trade. They got to bring somebody in.
They got too many bad arms.
This is not the moment to do that. This is just the moment in the middle of June is not when you get aggressive and make a trade. Right now, what they need to do is they got to ride this storm out. Like, they've got to somehow win a couple of games. They've got to avoid the absolute collapse that we're watching. They got to win a game or two. They got to play 500 ball. I said that 3 days ago before this sweep. I said, look, I'm not asking to win 8 out of 10. Just win a couple of games, stem the tide, play 500 baseball. You do have Sean Manaea coming back. What do I expect from Sean Manaea when he comes back? I expect him to be competitive. He may not be as good as he was last year, but I'm certainly not expecting him to be a disaster. Clay Holmes' start in this game against Atlanta was not great, but it's not causing me great concern yet. You know what I mean? Clay Holmes was a pitch away, and this is the fine line on performances.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game is right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Wherever summer takes you, save on your journey with True North convenience stores and Red Bull. Enjoy the new Red Bull Summer Edition, White Peach, a perfect balance of bold, sweet, and refreshing. Right now, grab any 3 8-ounce Red Bull for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon, just in time for your next road trip. Save big all summer long with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Literally, if he can get Baldwin, and he came close in that fifth inning, he is a pitch away from a laborious five innings, one run outing. So to turn that into, I'm panicking about Clay Holmes, I'm not there yet. Now, can I get there at some point? Sure. I'm not there yet. I think Griffin Canning has absolutely been mediocre lately. And so all eyes on him on Saturday in Philadelphia. That'll be a big challenge for him. But David Peterson has been mostly great. Kodai Senga, when he comes back, feels like a conquering hero. I'm not panicking about everybody in the rotation. What I'm panicking about is the back of the rotation and the way they have to fill these spots because they've lost numerous guys. So it's not they got to go out and just get somebody. Go get somebody. You're going to get somebody like Paul Blackburn right now. You're not going to get anybody that's a difference maker. Let's see where this rotation is in the middle of June, and let's see who's out there. I was really interested on this broadcast, for anyone who hung in there to the very end, Gary Cohen wished Jacob DeGrom a happy birthday. He said, hey, happy birthday to Jake. He's turning 37. And then very, you know, calmly said, you think the Rangers will trade him if they fall out of it? Keith says, I don't know. And then Brandon Nimmo made a great running catch and the inning was over. I was curious if they would go deeper on that conversation. Like, would he waive his no trade clause to come back to New York? Would the Mets want him back? Like, it never went anywhere because the inning was over. But you know, I know, and you know, even though that will not happen, like it will not happen, it doesn't mean the conversation won't happen. It doesn't mean people aren't going to email about it or call WFA and talking about it. But right now is not a time for trades. Right now is a time for survival. Let's get to some of your anxious emails. And, of course, we will name the Rico I'm the Man Now star of the series, which is always a challenge when you get swept. And, of course, the very much coveted net negative award, which when you get swept is the award people really want to talk about. Because who do we blame the most? But let's hear from Connor, who writes, we are cooked. That's a great way to start, right? We are cooked. I would like to start by saying I'm not at all the typical doomer Met fan. I think a lot of Met fans and talking heads say about the Mets on a regular basis is nonsense. That being said, I think the season is over. I just watched Brazoban walk a guy on four pitches to make it 3-1, and I can't help but think this is it. The rotation outside of Peterson is probably cooked. Canning is turning back into a pumpkin, and while Clay Holmes may still pitch well, he won't be able to make 30 starts. I guarantee it. The kids all seem to suck. Vientos, who expected stats were very down on last year, seems to suck as well. Manaea is on the wrong side of 30, and you have no idea what you'll get upon his return. Sorry for the doomerism, but I feel the exact same way I did in that three-game sweep in Atlanta in 2022. Hooray, we'll make the playoffs. But the story ends there. Connor, I read that email first because I do think there are a lot of Met fans who believe the season is over in the middle of June. And while I've said some negative things over the course of the 45 minutes of this Rico Bronya, you got to take a deep breath. You really do. They are tied for first place in the National League East. Yes, there are a lot of concerning things about this team and what we've witnessed over this six-game losing streak, but they are not cooked. The season is not over. remember, when you are bad, and right now they're bad, you're never as bad as you are when you are that bad. Steve Johnson writes, it's time to panic. I know this game hasn't ended yet. He wrote this at 9:20, so the game was not over yet. But let's face it, they are not going to come back and win, meaning they have managed to cough up a 6-game winning streak they had last week. The starting rotation is banged up and the offense has done nothing. This has come at the worst possible time, playing against your division rivals and still have their next 10 games against the Phillies and Braves. I'm having flashbacks to June of 2023 when the season went off the rails. Am I overreacting? P.S. Happy 500th episode. You and Hoff do an incredible job. Well, thank you, Steve. Thank you for the happy 500. The season is coming off the rails. There's a lot more that would have to happen for the season to come off the rails. They are 15 games above 500. The reason that's important is when you win a lot of games early and you start bagging these wins, specifically against Colorado, or ugly wins against the Pirates or the Nationals, they matter, and they mostly matter for things like this. So that when you do lose 6 in a row, and it very much looks like it's going to be 7 in a row and maybe more, that 7-game losing streak doesn't send you under 500 the way it did in 2015. That 7-game losing streak takes you to 14 games above 500, or in this case, 15 games above 500. So the beautiful thing about bagging those wins early is that if you can stem the tide right now, win a couple of games, play 500 baseball until they're healthier, it's not too late. Like, let me walk you through this. They're about to play 3 against the Phillies, 4 with Atlanta. Then they go to Pittsburgh. There's a lot going on here over the next couple of weeks. If they play 500 baseball till the All-Star break, that's it. Not asking a lot. They're 15 games above 500 or 16 games above 500 going into the All-Star break. You give yourself a chance to get healthy. Maybe Kodai Senga comes back. Maybe you make a big trade. And you have one more hot streak that gets you to 23 games above 500. You just won 90 games. And 90 wins should make you a playoff team. May make you a division winner. Who knows? So the idea that they're cooked is crazy. Sean writes, it's over. This series proved to me everything I need to know about this baseball team. They will not be making the playoffs. This is their true colors. The roster is a bunch of losers who got lucky last season. Completely pathetic and disgraceful. They have no reason to be believed in when you realize 2024 was an outlier. No track record of success. They don't deserve anyone trusting them. This is a very flawed, disappointing joke of a baseball team. This one's actually making me smile. Hopefully they continue to lose and actually sell off whatever they can at the deadline. I'm wondering if that's even real. Sean wrote again. Oops, one last thing. The Braves just ended another Mets season and in turn propelled their own to who knows where. You should do a live tracker of how many times now the Mets have had their season collapsed at the hands of the Braves. No, I think Sean's being serious. I think he's just very...
Hey, can I speak to Sean for a second? Because, listen, I'm a pessimist. I still have that bitterness of being a Met fan for 40-plus years, the pit in the stomach that, you know, once something like this, a 6-game losing streak takes place, all the negativity flows out of me because I'm reminded by the, you know, 17-7 collapse, or 7-17, excuse me, collapse, the 2007 or 2008, excuse me, collapse. There's too many moments where I just feel that negativity come out. It's easy to do, but the season's not over. Like, I'll be serious. People keep on asking me, are the Mets missing the playoffs? No, they're going to be in the playoffs. This is a bad stretch. The problem is I'm worried that this portion, this team that showed up these past 6 games are going to be there in the playoffs. That's unacceptable.
That's a little bit different. I think that's something we always talk about with the Yankees. When they struggle, it isn't that stretch is going to kill you. It's, hey, this is what scares me about what's going to do them in. You know, it's kind of funny. I'll give you a Knicks comparison. The Knicks regular season was not great for some fans, even though they won over 50 games. And a part of it was there were things that really concerned you about the team. And eventually, when they got eliminated by Indiana, those concerns, lack of communication on defense, things like that, reared its ugly head. So as we sit here today talking about this in the middle of June, their lack of clutch hitting, which has gone all season long. I mean, we are almost at the halfway point of the season, and they continue to be an awful team with runners in scoring position. It may not be that that derails them from making the playoffs, but it's fair to say, I just know when our season ends in the division series, in the wild card series, wherever it ends, because God knows I ain't winning the World Series. I don't think I'll ever be on the planet to see a world championship. That's just my own negativity. But however it ends, I can see that being your ultimate concern. Like, yeah, when it ends, we're going to be talking about how they went 2-for-45 in a best of seven series. So I get that. But what people really do need to do is remind yourself that even really good teams are going to go through awful stretches. Now, how good is this Met team? That's up to debate. We still have another half of a season to determine that. And a trade deadline where David Stearns is going to be tested. And injury luck where we'll see if they actually get some of that, where guys are healthy and they don't have catastrophic injuries. But judging a team at its worst is as unfair as judging a team at its best. Now, Billy Fritz has a recommendation. He writes, "This was such an embarrassing display of baseball of all three games that you need to take a stand, Evan. Nobody deserves the Rico, I'm the man now, star of the series." Well, Billy, I apologize. I've got some bad news. When we created this award at the beginning of the season, I made it very clear. I said, sometimes it's going to be really easy. Sometimes it's going to be tough because there's so many people that deserve it. And sometimes it's going to be impossible because the Mets just got swept and no one's going to want to give the award to anybody. But I remain firm that we will always hand out a Rico, I'm the man now, star of the series. So let's talk about the candidates. But I do want to remind you that you can knock one out of the park and raise the apple with Takara Chuhai, a sparkling cocktail that blends real shochu spirits with the delicious flavors of fruits locally grown in Japan. It's available at Citi Field in Fuji Apple, of course, white peach, and lemon. So I've got two candidates for the Rico, I'm the man now, star of the series. I feel even weird talking about it because this was such a dreadful series. But I do have two candidates, and then you tell me who deserves it most. Candidate number one is David Peterson. Look, the guy went out there and threw a hell of a game. And whether you disagree with Carlos Mendoza for allowing him to start the eighth inning, or you disagree with Carlos Mendoza for allowing him to face Acuna after issuing a walk, believe it or not, I took a call on WFAN saying that they were mad Peterson wasn't kept in the game after he gave up the hit to Acuna. And I said, what? Like, what year do you think this is? Wanted to keep him in after you put two guys on base? So, but whatever you think of that, take a step back. David Peterson pitched into the eighth inning against the Braves and had a lead. So I think David Peterson is a worthy candidate for the way he threw the baseball. And I think the other candidate is Tyrone Taylor. Tyrone Taylor went 2-for-3 in the opener. He drove in 3 of the 4 runs that gave the Mets the 4-1 lead. He also went 1-for-3. Believe it or not, against Chris Sale. And then in the finale of this series against Spencer Strider, went 1-for-4 and stole a base. So overall, he ended up going 4-for-10. Not bad. That's not bad. Now, that's where it ends. Like, to me, those are the two candidates. I cannot think of anyone else that even deserves consideration. So between Tyrone Taylor and David Peterson Hoff, who would you give this prestigious award to?
I would go Tyrone Taylor. You nailed it. Listen, and this is not against David Peterson, but what did David Peterson do? I mean, he pitched well. They lost the game. He didn't save the bullpen. He didn't save anything. He did an effective job, but at the end of the day, they lost. Tyrone Taylor, like you said, drove in 3 of the 4 runs on Tuesday, and he scored the only other run that was – that the Mets scored in 2 games. So he was responsible for four runs. He four to five runs he had a part of.
There's also one other thing he did. And some may not look at this as a big deal, or they may mock him for it. But Tyrone Taylor on the game-winning sacrifice fly by Austin Riley made one of the great catches you'll ever see, even though it obviously was meaningless. Because other than the base runner tripping and falling on his own ass, there's no way that Tyrone Taylor was going to be able to throw him out. But there is something admirable about playing it through. You know, 90% of the time on a ball hit that far on a sack fly, the center fielder won't even chase it. The center fielder will start running off of the field. Most guys would. And instead, Tyrone Taylor went back, and made one of the most underrated great catches you'll ever see. So I give him credit for playing it through. You know, a lot of these emails featured they quit, they were gutless and all that. Tyrone Taylor did not quit and was not gutless.
No, and like you said, too, like, okay, maybe the runner would have tripped, or maybe the runner would have left early. Like, I know, maybe he got too excited. You never know. So I like to see people play things out. And Tyrone Taylor, not for nothing, all season long, he's been making plays in the outfield left and right, keeping the team, like, together in the outfield. I got to be honest, right now, defensively, he's the MVP on the roster.
Tyrone Taylor is now a two-time I'm the Man Now Rico star of the series. You'd have to go all the way back to the Arizona series. Remember when the Mets lost 2 out of 3 to the Arizona Diamondbacks? Tyrone Taylor went 5 for 12 in that series and won this award. So Tyrone Taylor's got a knack for winning the award when the series goes bad. Congratulations. Let's get to the contested one, and that is the net negative of this series. There are so many options after game one. I was getting emails saying it should be Carlos Mendoza. Francisco Alvarez was a very popular name. I think Francisco Alvarez got exonerated by Luis Torrens's "Let me use my helmet to scoop the baseball up" circus act.
Yeah.
Look, Alvarez was terrible in game one. There's no defending what happened there. But I think when you look at the totality of this series, there is a runaway winner. And you could argue Paul Blackburn, you know, you could throw him in there for giving up the leadoff home run to Ronald Acuna Jr. He's up there. You could certainly argue Waskar Brazoban. I think Waskar Brazoban is a wonderful candidate, considering what happened in the extra innings and certainly considering what happened in the finale of this series. So I think Waskar Brazoban is a net negative candidate, but there is an obvious winner in my mind, and I love the man. I do. And he knows it. Like, if this guy was voting on the net negative, he'd vote for himself. Because one of the things about this man is he really believes in accountability. And that is Francisco Lindor. Francisco Lindor got on base one time in this series, and that was a walk. He was 0-for-11. 0-for-11 with 4 strikeouts. And so you can rip Brandon Nimmo, who is 2-for-11. You could rip Juan Soto, who is 3-for-11 and made a few outs on the bases. You can even rip Pete Alonso, who is 3-for-12, or Jeff McNeil, who is 2-for-11. Like, nobody hit. But all those guys did a little bit more offensively than Francisco Lindor. So we could pick on Waskar Brazoban and say it's him. We could pick on Francisco Alvarez and say it's him. But it starts with the catalyst. You're the leadoff hitter of this team. And in a lot of ways, they go when Lindor goes. So Francisco Lindor, believe it or not, for the fourth time this season, is your net negative. It's been a weird year for Lindor because he's won the I'm the Man Now award 4 times, but he's also won the net negative 4 times, which I guess shows you the kind of streakiness that Francisco has had this season.
Well, he's also very impactful. Like, I mean, it seems like the team goes as he goes, like you said. And that's the thing is, you know, he was hitting the ball hard. No one's going to say that he wasn't, right? Like, I mean, he did get some really good rips on the ball. The defense has played him well. But if he's not getting it, it's almost like the Aaron Judge syndrome. If he ain't getting on base, if he's not hitting the ball, Yankees aren't winning. It feels like it's very similar with the Mets, too. Like, he sets the tone. If he's not getting on base, if he's not driving in runs, getting leadoff home runs, Mets aren't winning.
Dan, who is a regular contributor to the Rico and to Evident Tiki, has made the point over the last few days in his emails that game 161 is really looking like a facade in the history of the Mets Braves rivalry, because they kick our ass all the time. They break our hearts all the time. There is such a long list of them inflicting pain on us. And game 161, the two innings basically at the end of the game, which was amazing. We all love it. I mean, it's a Mets classic on SNY for the rest of eternity. But he's made the point that it really feels like it's an anomaly. Dan writes, was the Lindor home run the biggest facade in Mets history? Absolutely sackless, just laying down and pathetically dying, as literally not a single thing has changed. And I don't want to hear anybody say differently. You even have Gary calling for a punt game in the sixth before the Matt Olson at bat if he got a hit in that spot, already planning on waving the white flag if it becomes a five-run game, because even he knows they don't have the stones to fight back against this team. It perfectly encapsulates everything about this group when they come down here, because as soon as they get one punch to the face, they roll over like gutless dogs. I don't see a single person that is going to do anything about it, considering they only have for two OMG innings in the entire 4.5 seasons they've been together. Maybe it's Soto, but eventually I wouldn't bank on that coming anytime soon. The thing that he says that does ring true is this Met Brave thing, which is like mental scarring on us as Met fans. The idea that game 161 changes all that really does feel like BS. It was a great moment last year. It was a wonderful, unbelievable game. But the idea that that kind of like the 04 Red Sox was just going to change Yankees Red Sox, which it did. Like 04 not only saw the Red Sox come back on the Yankees, that rivalry changed forever after that series. Look at the results. Look at the history. Like, it was no longer hammer and nail. The idea that us beating the Braves in 161 was just going to change everything has not been the case so far. And this three-game series is a reminder that this city and this stadium, even though it's a new stadium, is still a house of horrors. And they play horribly down there. And for them to lose the way they did in the opener and then basically be non-competitive the next 2 days and get outscored a combined 12-1, it's very discouraging. And I know that Mendoza didn't manage in 2022, and a lot of this roster wasn't around in 2022, and they don't know a damn thing about 1999 or 2001 or any of our history, but our history is our history, and it feels like it's just on loop when the Mets go down to Atlanta.
Yeah, no, honestly, it's one of those things. I think they're 1-7 in their last 8 games. Am I correct in that? I mean,
in Atlanta?
Yeah.
Sounds about right. I mean, think about it. They ended up losing 2 out of 3 in that final series. The third game we don't care about because whatever, the season was over. But the first game of that series, 5 days earlier or a week earlier before the hurricane, was a lifeless loss. So, yeah, they haven't won much down there.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, and we were, that's what I was saying, man. Like, I just feel the resurgence of hell that we went through over, you know, 20 plus years, 30 plus years of watching this Mets team and just being in on every single pitch, having the nightmares of Chipper Jones and freaking Andrew Jones and Greg Maddux and the rest of them. It's, and now we're, here's the thing is this Braves team is not as great as those other Braves teams. Think about it. I know Strider had a good game today, but I think he was very hittable. You said it.
First three innings, he was hittable. Yes.
Yeah. And you also said, too, like, besides the Colorado start, the guy was terrible. I don't understand how all of a sudden he turned into an ace in within three innings. And it's frustrating. And then you got Chris Sale, really the only guy on this team that is as good on paper as he is in real life.
So it all sets up 3 games in Philadelphia, where right now we're looking at it saying, my God, can they somehow win this series? Is that possible? It doesn't feel good. They are going to go with Blade Tidwell in the opener against Zach Wheeler, which is a major, major mismatch. Griffin Canning is going to try to bounce back against Mick Abel, who's pitched very well. He's a former first-round pick of the Phillies from, I think it was 2020, and he's off to a very good start in his young major league career. And then David Peterson and Jesus Luzardo in the Sunday night game on ESPN before they take on Atlanta. And looking ahead with the Braves, it looks like the Braves are going to throw the same guys out there. Like, we are going to see Spencer Schwellenbach again. We are going to see Chris Sale again. We are going to see Spencer Strider again, the way that series is lined up. So get ready to see if the Met bats can make some adjustments against their big arms.
If we don't hit or score double digits off of Jesus Lazardo, I'm going to throw something through the wall, because that guy sucks this year. He has been lit up basically against every single team, every start he's had. I don't think he's gone. Has he gone five innings? Has he gone deep into any game?
I think he's had a better year than you realize.
Dude, every time I see him, he's given up a ton of runs. Maybe I'm dead wrong on that, but I thought he was been complete utter ass.
So far this year, 15 starts, 6-3 record, 4.41 ERA. His last start he made against Miami the other day, 5 innings, 4 runs, so not very good. Against the Cubs, pitched great, 6 innings, 1 run, 10 strikeouts, no walks. But he got bombed in his 2 starts before that. Against the Blue Jays, 2 1/3 innings, 8 runs. And against the Brewers, 3 1/3 innings, 12 runs, which is almost impossible to do. And his start before that was pretty good against the A's. So, yeah, he's had some really bad ones mixed in there and some good ones mixed in there.
Yeah, well, listen, let's get the bad one mixed in for us, all right? If he has, like, a shutout, a nine-inning shutout, oh, dude, I'll be done with the team for a little bit.
Well, this is going to be an interesting weekend. Going to Philadelphia with a 6-game losing streak and tied for first place. What we need more than anything is a that's baseball Susan kind of moment, which is the Met bats just pounding Zach Wheeler and Blade Tidwell finding its way through 5 good innings. But it's tough to imagine that happening, which means when we do episode 501 live from Fanatics Fest, where we are scheduled to be joined by Carlos Mendoza, neither of us are going to be in good moods. Mendy ain't going to be in a good mood. I'm not going to be in a good mood, but it'll be fun, right? We'll be at Fanatics Fest. If you are heading out there, we are broadcasting on Saturday. The Rico will be live on YouTube, technology permitting, and also live for those in attendance. And then, of course, it'll be a podcast, so you can download it wherever you download your podcast. But we are going to do it at about 10:15, 10:30 a.m. And I was checking out where we'll be set up, in case anyone is going down there and they're like, hey, where's it at? So let me just confirm this before I say it out loud. But I'm pretty sure we are going to be broadcasting. In fact, I have it in front of me at the Dick's Sporting Goods stage at about 10:30 a.m. So the Dick's Sporting Goods stage is what you should look for if you're at Fanatics Fest in New York City on Saturday, where, again, we'll be doing a live Rico Bronya, and we are scheduled to be joined by the manager of the struggling New York Mets, Carlos Mendoza. We do appreciate you listening and subscribing. Remember to download the Rico Bronya wherever you download your podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. And of course, your therapy. You can email us, thericob@gmail.com. Keep your chin up, because as much as things suck, they have sucked more than they have sucked now in the past. That's a positive. Thank you very much for listening to Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Wherever summer takes you, save on your journey with True North convenience stores and Red Bull. Enjoy the new Red Bull Summer Edition, White Peach, a perfect balance of bold, sweet, and refreshing. Right now, grab any 3 8-ounce Red Bull for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon, just in time for your next road trip. Save big all summer long with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
They're already stars, but now you can make them all stars. Vote in the 2025 Pro Spirit MLB All-Star Ballot 5 times daily. Show your favorite players just how much you want to see them play in Atlanta. And new this year, download and visit the MLB Pro Spirit game during Phase 1, and you can secure an additional vote per day for your favorite players. Submit your ballot today at MLB.com/vote and add some shine to summer. Voting ends June 26th at 12 p.m. Eastern Time. MLB trademarks used with permission.